My name is Brendan. I'm an alcoholic. How you guys doing? Good? All right. Hope you guys don't mind. I think I'm going to take my coat off. I'm a little hot. And yeah. Can I get a little music? All right. I tend to move around a bit, a little hyperactive, so wearing, in Seattle, that's basically all we have for clothing is wool, so coming down here to the desert's a little different. I would like to thank the group for inviting me to speak. It is a privilege. I didn't earn the right to be here, for sure, and you'll become very aware of that as we move on. But I'd also like to thank my host, Pete. We have a lot of history, and thank you. You've been a great host. Appreciate it. And met a lot of cool people from Utah up at the conference. If you didn't go, you should definitely go. I really, really, really can't say enough how much that conference back where I'm from has really helped Alcoholics Anonymous in our primary message, and as you heard. So I'll get started. I already told you my name. My home group is Drunks R Us North, a group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Meets on Friday nights at 8 p.m. in Shoreline, Washington, just north of Seattle. Starts at 8 p.m. And if you want directions, I'll give you my info. But you can, if you're ever up there, you can call Pete, and he has my info. And my sponsor's name is Ken. Kenny Down. I think he was down here speaking with you guys before. Great man. And he has a sponsor. And he definitely has gone through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I come from a long, well, I don't say lineage because it just sounds too elitist, but I do come from a spiritual heritage in Alcoholics Anonymous, where much like everybody here, where we just go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous one page at a time, and miraculously we do exactly what it says. It's a novel concept, and it was to me. So to qualify myself, you know, we should probably talk a little bit about that. I grew up in a town called Rebna, Washington, and I grew up in a really tight Irish Catholic family that does not make me alcoholic, although it did not help matters, cause complications, and as I like to say, just made for more drinking. If you know anything about that, I had four brothers. I come from, we come from a fist-fighting family. And there's a lot, that's the crazy thing is, a lot of love and, in that household. But at the same time, there was a lot of violence, a lot of craziness and insanity. And, my brothers used to chase each other around, fist fights, I hucked butcher knives at my brothers. They hucked them back, and here, catch, that happened a couple times, and then they look at you like, dude, and you're just like, you're scared, you're about to hit them in the head, and I'm just like, yeah, I meant to do that, because you want to scare them, so, to think that you're crazier than they are. And we also play this game, we run around the house, and it was, first one of the fire poker wins. I don't know if you guys ever played that lovely family game. It's a great one. You got to play it, though. There's a couple rules. It has to be made out of solid iron steel. Can't be this wimpy Walmart stuff, it like bends over their head, like cartoon. It has to be like solid, like it does some damage, with the hook. And because that way when they come around the corner and you got that, and although you're about 6 years younger, it's suddenly an even playing field really quick. You're just, swinging away like, I will kill you, no, it's over, and until, you get tired and then they grab it from you and then... Yep. God love those days. One of my other favorite games was they put me in a suitcase and roll me down the stairs. I'm a real big guy, as you can tell, so that was fun. I like being carried around, and I swear to God, it was kind of fun, And until they'd roll me down, my brother James one day said, let's put a beanbag at the bottom of the stairs. And I'm thinking, oh, soft landing, And he actually continues and says, that way it doesn't keep rolling and make a hole in the wall, And I'm like, great, more worried about the plaster than my head. Nice. So, there's a lot of insanity, in that house. And my dad was a drinker. My dad was an attorney in town, and he became city attorney. He started, you know, Rotary Club, Chamber of Commerce, president of that, planting trees at City Hall, you know, all that stuff. And we started a parish there in the town, and we were really involved and very visible. And my dad, though, he was a great man, he really is. And I'll get into that more because, you know, we do have a good relationship today, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I assure you. Because he was a real Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like you hear about in that book. You know, he would start drinking when he came home, and it was, and, you know, his scotch and his tumblers and these, I don't know, like Egyptian gold-plated things on there. I still remember that and chinkering it around. And Dad would change. He would take that alcohol, and something would come over him, and we would go into hiding. And Mom, you know, it was, like I said, it was violent. You know, Mom, when I was five, one scene I'll give you is, I woke up to my dad, you know, screaming at my mom and carrying her by the end of her hair and dragging her down the hallway like a caveman. And my mom holding on for dear life. And, you know, going in that bathroom and hearing stuff run around and sitting there wondering, oh, my God, what's going to happen? You know, it's a little bit too much for somebody. So I just buried my head in the pillow and cried, you know. And then the next morning I got up, Mom was making bacon and eggs, and Dad had the suit and the briefcase. And, love you, honey. You know, bye. Have a good day. And I'm like, what? You know, like, I mean, that's confusing, you know, and that does not make me an alcoholic. But I need to let you know some of my history, because I know that some people come from that kind of background. And even if you don't, I just want you to know that no matter what background you come from, since 1991 when I first got sober, and the 16 and a half years I've been in this deal, I have seen an unbelievable number of miracles of people coming from, as it says, the scrap heap of life. You know, elevated to a life, you know, much better than they could have ever known. You know, so no matter how far down the scale I went, you know, I realized that I can get better too. So I want you to know, if you do come from that, you can quit drinking for good and ever. But more than that, more than just, you know, stopping drinking, you can have a life, you know, a real life, you know, where not filled with the pain and the memories of that. Because that stuff doesn't, although it's part of my story, I don't suffer from my past anymore. It's actually become one of my greatest assets. And I use it to go fishing in Alcoholics Anonymous, looking for that face of hopelessness. So, I got this crazy household, and I'm just out of my mind, and I'm really out of my mind, and I find drinking, I drank a little bit, like sixth grade, I think I drank a King Budweiser beer, and I drank it on the playground, and a Coca-Cola can, and whatever, got a little buzz, and woo. We drank some beer, you know, but the real time I really drank alcohol, the first time that I really can say that I really did the job right, you know, was I stole a bottle of McNaughton whiskey, and I'm sure this is classic for alcoholics, but, you know, it was Mike and his mom and me over the house, and she went shopping, she put it up on the shelf, she went into the bedroom, he had to go to the bathroom, I grabbed the bottle, ran across the street, hit it in some bushes, ran back in, sat down at the kitchen table like nothing had happened. You know, and then they came out, and his mom's like, oh, I swear I just brought that bottle in. Where did you see the bottle? You know, I'm like, oh, I don't know. And this is the part you relate to. Here, let me help you look for it. Oh, yeah. You know it, don't you? Yeah. So I'm helping him look for the bottle of fifth of McNaughton whiskey, and we can't find it anywhere. And, so I go back home, and several months later, you know, I'm with that guy, Mike, and a couple other guys. We're behind a house, and, you know, the summer after sixth grade, we're about to go into seventh grade, big time. And, junior high, all right, you know, and we pull out these glasses, and I start drinking. And I'm the guinea pig, because they're all looking at me. I'm the guy that's willing to try. And I'm stepping up for the team. And so I start drinking, and I'm drinking nothing. More, drink nothing. You know, I think it's supposed to be instant, you know, because it looked like it was instant in my dad's eyes. So I'm thinking, this is going to be instant. And nothing's happening. I drink 3/4 a bottle of McNaughton whiskey, you know, my first time. And I'm like, this stuff sucks. Nothing happened. You know, and I get up, and they're like, really nothing? I'm like, no, man, I don't get it. And I stood up, and I might drink this fast. And should be a sign when you've never drank before, and you're drinking, like, straight, you know, McNaughton whiskey, and you're not even phasing, you know. You're just like, like water, you know. And I step up on the next deck level, and it was like, oh. And I guess apparently I said, something happening now. And I have very, very brief recollections of that night. I remember being on the porch. Apparently I was there for an hour. I thought it was like 5 minutes. I was crying because I couldn't tie my shoes. You guys get those emotional drunks? I can't tie my shoes! And you're just like, oh, 12 hours of this crap, you know? Like, let's just give him more so he passes out, you know? And but that's my problem. I mean, I didn't really ever pass out, you know? I drank, you know? You guys get that? You drink, you're more awake. You're just like, woo! 2 days, here we go, you know? And who knows where we're going, what towns we get to visit. Good times. So, you know, I go on like this, and I guess apparently I was falling down, hitting my head on cars and the pavement, and they were getting concerned of brain injury, and you know, not like I was feeling it, you know. And so Mike, being a good man, even though he looked at me and said, "You did steal that bottle," which, yeah, I was like, yeah, you know, and forgot about that one. See, it's hard to keep that stuff straight, isn't it? I stole from him, make sure not to bring it out when he's around. Forgot. Okay, so, you know, so he goes, and he's a nice guy, so he goes and steals a motorcycle helmet, but all they have is an extra large one, so I get this extra large motorcycle helmet on my head. Yeah, so if you can imagine, I'm 7th grade, you know, down here, and, you know, like, I'm a big guy already, but, you know, I got this giant motorcycle helmet on my head, and I'm falling left and right and hitting my head more and more, you know? I mean, I'm just, it's like Weeble Wobbles, you know those things? So if the helmet tips, I go wherever it goes, and it's just like gravity time, you know. We're walking down the sidewalk, and I'm getting real conked, and you know what's cool is, like, those masks come down, and I can hear my own voice, which is a great thing for a drunk, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, Luke, use the force, and they're like, shh, and I'm popping it up, what, you know, they're just like, dude, you know. So they're taking me over to this girl's house, because her dad's an alcoholic, and he'll know what to do at 3 a.m., you know, that's a good idea. Hey, Mr. Munoz, hey, our buddy's drunk. We know you're a drunk. What do we do? You know, freaking moron, you know? It's like, yeah, that's a good one. So it really was John's excuse just to go see Heather, who was really beautiful. And, you know, so I get the drunk dump. I mean, you guys probably know what that is, where you got your buddy and you don't want to, you know, get commingled with the wife or fiance or girlfriend or family, and you don't want to be involved at all when you're dropping them off. You're like, bye. You know, good luck, buddy, you know, and put him on the lawn and let him find him in the morning for all you care, you know. It's like, eh, it's 20, he'll be good for a couple hours, you know. And, you know, so they drop me in the back window and they drop me off. Mike, my good buddy, who I stole a McDonald whiskey from his mom, was good enough to, he took care of me that whole night, you know, even though I ripped him off. And, you know, my brother Brian comes out and goes, "You're drunk," because I guess I was really noisy. I wasn't quiet, apparently, and so I bent over backwards over the couch like a gymnast, pulled up forward, and I guess apparently there was a girl at my school named Buffy, that's no lie, her name was really Buffy, and she ever hears this, I'm very sorry, but she was beautiful, beautiful blonde girl at my school, and I guess I tried to grope my brother and make a pass at him and said, "Buffy," and my brother was not having that one, you know. And my mom came down, got me, went upstairs. There's my dad, and it went so well with my brother. I guess apparently I tried to grope my dad and make a pass at him and said, "Buffy." And, you know, I hate to say it, but she heard about that story later. My buddies told her, oh, that was humiliation on the ski bus, I'll tell you, coming down. "Did you, I heard that you," and I'm like, "Oh, God, yeah. Sorry about that." But, you know, that was my first night drinking, you know, and nothing really happened, you know. I mean, stuff happened, but, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I didn't go to jail, you know. I mean, I didn't wake up married, you know, like you hear some people talk about. You're like, wow, that's a good one, you know. And, you know, I didn't wake up in Detroit, you know. Used to have some friends, actually thought it was funny, they used to get their money together, and the drunk guy, back in the day, I guess you could put them on the planes, they wouldn't care, and tell them they were going to a wedding, he's going to a wedding, he's got to get on, oh, okay, give him a one-way ticket to, like, you know, wherever, Bogota, Colombia, welcome, you know. God, you know, if I ever, you know, I hope I never drink again, but I swear to God, if I ever do, I am going to do that one, man. I'm sending you to, like, Moscow one way, like, you know, and, you know, God, that'd be a good one. That's some good revenge, isn't it? Yeah, they wake up, no wallet, nothing. Like, where am I? I don't even speak the language here. It sucks. So anyways, you know, what ends up happening is that, you know, that's my first drunk. You know, it's like, whatever. You know, and I want more of that. You know, and it's funny, and it's fun, and, you know, we're all about that. But you know what? As you guys know, this thing progresses. And, you know, I steal my first keg when I'm 14 from the battalion fire chief up the street. And I'm 14 and I own a keg. Good times. You are Mr. Popular at 14 with a keg. I mean, everyone's like, you know, everyone knows your name. It's like Norm. It's like Brendan. Yeah, you know, and that's what we're doing. And, you know, I start doing, you know, there are some drugs in my story, but I just want to make clear that, you know, I am an alcoholic, you know, and I am here to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, I started doing other things around that time, you know, and I'd wake up and I'd do those things so I could manage my day. And what I found, and I hope if you're here and you're new, that you answer that question. You know, are you an alcoholic of the hopeless variety described in this book? You know, that. And then if you have other things in your life, I hope you answer that separately, completely separately, because they're not the same, you know. You can take my mom and give her as much alcohol as you want and jam it down her throat, and I guarantee you're not going to make an alcoholic out of her. In fact, after a couple glasses of wine, my mom has this expression of, she gets all giddy and, you know, and she gets all laughing, goes, oh, I'm starting to feel it, I better stop. What's up with that? You know, it's like, yeah, more, you know, like, man. So, you know, I had to answer that question for myself, you know, and, you know, I ended up, God, through this drinking career, it was just ridiculous. But just fast forward, you know, I mean, I was going to, my parents were sending me to counselors, and in total, I went to 4 different counselors and a psychotherapist. And they provided drugs for me and took me off drugs. And they gave me a Minnesota test, I think, for 15 minutes. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that, but it's, I don't know, long bubble thing where they figure out what's really wrong with you. And apparently I was, like, manic depressive, bipolar, and some blah, 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 blah other stuff that was psychotic, you know, and then sent me on my way. And good times. But, you know, I wound up drinking pretty much at one point, you know, we started drinking every day. You know, I needed alcohol to get through. You know, I'd wake up, and it was like, I mean, I literally, I remember this one, you know, the sobering moment I remember. I was sitting in the high school vice principal's office or whatever, and she's looking across from me, and she says, you know, Brendan, oh, and she's with the sober teacher, by the way. I don't know if you guys have those down here, but we started these sober groups in high schools and our feeble attempt. And she's in there and glaring at me, and I'd just gotten loaded. I mean, really bad. And I'm trying to look as sober as I can, you know, where you're like, you know. You know, and your eyes are like this, you know, and you're like, you know, you're like, oh, my God, I think I'm half-eyed right now. I'm Chinese. Oh, my God, open my eyes, you know. And she looks at me and she says, you know, Brendan, you have not been in classes. And this class here for like, I don't know, it was like 60 days. And this one like 80 days. And you know, it's funny. It's like you think I would have noticed. But I'm just looking at her going, what? Like, I'm surprised. I'm shocked. I'm like, no way, man. I swear I've been here every day. And they're like, no. And what, see, what the thing was is that I was there every day, but not in class. See, I'd show up, I'd be loaded, and I couldn't even make it an hour period without sneaking into the bathroom. So I'd go in before every class, and they give you just enough time between the bell rings to get to your next class, sit down. But I'm like running to the bathroom, getting loaded, and as you guys know, it's not like, you know, I'm just going to have a little, you know, and it's like, you know, it's on, you know, and then, you know, however long you come out later, you know, and then the next class, then I run to the bathroom, I try to do the next thing, you know, and it's like, and then finally at lunch, we may never come back, you know, and that's kind of how, what was going on, you know, and my brother Brian went to, you know, went to treatment one day. And, you know, my mom came home from that treatment center, and something changed completely. My mom went away, and they returned an Al-Anon Nazi. And, you know, it was like, it was on. And I just want to make clear, you know, if there's any Al-Anons here tonight, I am so grateful for Al-Anon, really, because Alcoholics Anonymous may have saved my life, but Al-Anon was the one that got me there. It really was. I have the utmost respect for that program. And my mom starts getting after me and realizing that I'm not closing the Redmond pool every night, and that's I'm not swimming in chlorine is not really actually the cause of the red eyes. And, you know, she starts figuring out putting a lot of stuff together, you know, and there's insanity in my house, you know. I mean, my brother's trying to be sober, you know, he's in treatment, and I'm out of my mind. And, you know, I'm not a big guy, but I don't know if you guys relate, but I was a rageaholic too. And you know what that is that, you know, I had that thing inside me that just, you know, like I was supposed to be here, this alive thing, right? But, you know, I just couldn't see myself surviving in this world. You know, I just couldn't see myself as necessary. You know, I'm just like, I am the most unnecessary being on the planet, you know. And, you know, I'm going to bed at night, and I'm praying to God. I'm just like, please, just don't let me wake up. I mean, honestly, I'm begging God. I'm like, you know, if you just take me off this planet right now, if you just take Brendan out, you know, and I wake up in the morning, take my memory out of everything. I haven't done anything. I mean, there's no textbook that's going to have to be edited, you know, for, you know, Brendan Daly of Redmond, you know, did this. You know, it was like, I did nothing. You know, I contributed nothing to this world. And so I thought, you know, please, just please. You know, God obviously didn't answer that prayer. He chose not to take me out. And I begged for that, you know. And, hold on, I got some water. I always say water. I used to say drink. But then you hear me gulping, and it always made people nervous. So anyways, you know, I go to my counseling appointments, you know, and I'm looking at my mom, and, you know, she's sitting there, and they're trying to figure out what's wrong with Brendan. And I'm looking at her, telling her, you know, I mean, to her eyes, to her face, you know, I've become just an awful existence of a being. And I'm in so much pain, the only way I can feel any better, I try to lash out and make you feel worse. And so I tell my mom, you know, when you die, I'm not going to your funeral. And when you die and you're buried, I'm going to dig you up. I'm going to take the gold out of your teeth, and I'm going to sell it for drugs. And, you know, that's not such a nice comment, you know. And my mom sat there and cried in that counseling session. And she thought, you know, what is wrong with you, you know. And, I mean, that's just, I just did it just to pretty much just for shock value and just to really hurt her, you know. Because I can't stand who I am and who I've become. I can't stand being here. And the worst thing about that is mom's just giving me unconditional love. She's just loving me. And I freaking hate it. You know? I mean, I hate it. We're going to counseling. I love you. Oh, God. You know? Please just kill me now. You know? And, you know, I used to pray for Mack truck to hit me because then at least everyone would feel sorry because it was an accident. And, of course, we'd have a big parade behind my casket. And, in reality, it would have been pedestrian, did not watch where he was going, was hit, and it would be all be about public safety in the crosswalk. It would have nothing to do with Brendan. Because, really, I mean, that's it, you know. And so what ends up happening is that, you know, I'm going to these things, nothing's working, you know, and I get in this, like I said, you know, I'm not proud of this, but, you know, I used to get in these fights, and I started to get this reputation, crazy psycho Norman is what they used to call me. Used to. Some people still do. But, you know, what happened was is that, you know, I hit this guy so bad, you know, I broke three of his teeth, his jaw, and it was one punch and it was over. And I walked away. And nothing happened that day. He didn't do anything to me except for bug me. And that was the thing. You just never knew it was going to set me off. I mean, I was crazy. I mean, just one wrong thing and it was like, poof, it was like an eruption. It was crazy. And I've been trained since I was, like, born by my brothers with, you know, I mean, knives and, you know, I mean, you know, fire pokers and all that. So, you know, it's like you get hit and it's like, please. I have four Irish brothers who beat the crap out of me since I was born. What do you got? You know, ooh. You know, and, you know, ooh, you're going to hit me a couple times. Wow. You know, and, you know, so that just stuff never worked out too well, though. And I was asked, no, let me rephrase that. I was not asked. I was told that I would not be attending that school ever again. And I was supposed to go into that school the next year. I was summer school. Anyone do summer school? Yeah, the makeup session. God, that sucker, what? And, you know, so we're doing that. And, you know, my dad tells me, because he's an attorney, he's like, you got to turn yourself in. We're getting reports that they're going to come for you. And I went, okay. So off we go, and we turn myself in. And my dad tells me that, you know, if we go to treatment, it might help. And my dad pays for my first treatment center, inpatient. And I'd already tried outpatient at this time, and all the counselors and that, and with no success. And, you know, well, before I tell that, I just got to tell one story. Right before that, I was sober about 5 days before a year, because like I said, my mom was in Al-Anon not seen. They made me go to AA meetings, and they were trying to save me. But I wasn't ready. And that's another thing. No one can make you get sober. You know, it's like when you're ready, you're ready. When you're utterly destroyed completely from the inside, then and only then maybe you'll be able to connect with somebody and they have a chance here, you know. And but I had 5 days for a year, and I went home one day without even thinking. And I mean not a thought in my head. no fight whatsoever, as it says about another guy in there. And I went home, and I went inside, and I remember seeing a bottle behind the battery can, the extra battery can in the kitchen. And my mom had kicked my dad out by now. They were getting divorced, and my mom had created a sober household. And I started taking pulls off this cooking wine. And it was like, if you've been sober for any period of time with no solution, it's like, man, when you start taking that drink, when you're going back out, it's like, thank God. Why did I wait so long, you know? And I really mean that, you know, because without a solution, you know, separation from alcohol, not sobriety. Separation from alcohol is the worst because it's what works for me. You know, without that solution, I get worse in sobriety, never better, just like when I'm drinking. It's the same thing. You know, so I take this off, and it tastes like soy sauce, tastes like junk, and I'm like, this is disgusting, you know, and I call my buddy, he brings down 8 beers, and we proceed to drink those, because he tastes it, and he thinks it tastes like crap, but I've drank like half this bottle by the time, he's 2 houses up, you know, and I called him when I took my first sip. By the time he got down, I was chugging half the bottle, I just need to get it on, you know, I could not stand being who I was in my skin. I just needed out. I just could not handle the pain anymore, you know, it was too great. And what ended up happening is I remember talking at this place once, this, I don't know, district thing, I don't know, gratitude banquet thing, and my mom came up afterwards, and she said, honey, I did get rid of all the alcohol. She said, at Costco, those big things, I had to break it down to smaller things, so I used that for the soy sauce. And I thought, oh, my God, man, I chugged half a bottle of soy sauce, you know, to get it on. So, yeah, don't ask me out for teriyaki, please. No, thanks. And, I'm thirsty, yeah. And what ends up happening is, I realize, oh, my God, you know, that's something, you know. And then I go to treatment, and I go to Wilderness Survival, and that's where they take you out in the desert, strip you down, give you a buck knife for 21 days, and good luck, you know. And, Lord of the Flies, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're not really becoming friends out there, you know. And, so I'm with this group of guys, and... an amazing experience, I'll tell you. You know, it really did change my life, but not enough to make me sober. It was not the solution for my alcoholism. And, I was out there, and I ate a mouse, and took the mouse skin, put it in a medicine pouch, the rattlesnake vertebrae, and I came back, and then we started going to meetings, and then I had this thing, and if you can imagine, this awesome, long mullet hair, you know, and, God, what a great cut. But, I'm at these meetings, and they're like, you know, now I've arrived, I'm a personality. And they're like, let's hear from Rat Boy. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm Rat Boy, you know. And, I'm sharing about, you know, and, I'm talking like this. I'm like, yeah, I went to the desert, and I found God. It was unbelievable. You know, and I'm talking really soft-spoken, because that's how spiritual people talk, you know. And we're real spiritual, you know. And, you know, just that voice, you know, that soothing voice, you know, and thanks, Pete. And, so I'm Rat Boy in the meetings, and, those great meetings in the beginning where I'm going to, we're talking about that, where the meetings I was going to, because I need a place to feel safe and okay, and I come from this craziness, and there's stuff going on in my head. So I went to meetings where it was louder out here than it was in my head. You guys ever do that? You know, it's just, I just have so much crap in here. I need to go place that's just filled with insanity so I felt normal, you know, and I'm the Rat Boy, you know, and it's great. So, I stole 10 pounds of sugar from that meeting, and I went back to treatment on that night, you know, and because they were taking me to an outside meeting, and I was putting it in cellophane packets and selling it and distributing it throughout the treatment center, and I got caught for that one, and so then they were singing Def Leppard, Pour Some Sugar on Me every time I walked in a room. And again, you know what, it's funny, and you know what, and they're all like, yay, Brendan, you know, and it's like, you know, and that's danger to me, you know, because what it's doing, it's allowing me to be insincere about what's really going on. It's allowing me to just kind of play the game, live or die, whatever, you know. And, so I get out of that deal, and literally about, I don't know, I think I was sober total 3 months. So I had 56 days when I got out, 35 in, 21 wilderness, 56 days, and I'm at my dad's apartment, and I think it's around Christmas time, and he's got these Christmas bottles wrapped up, somebody given them, and that urge comes on, and there's no, oh, I think I'll call, you know, somebody in AA, you know, that doesn't happen to me. My story is that I don't call you guys, man. It's like, why would I do that? You're going to tell me not to drink and go to a meeting. you know? Yeah, okay, that's a good idea, you know? And so I, you know, I get the drink on, and it's like, I don't think about that, you know? I don't have that, you know, mental defense that's, oh, you know, that was a bad idea. You know, remember that story? That was bad, you know? It's like, no, who cares? You know, I need something to drink now, you know? And that's all I think about, you know, is drink. In the back of my head, constantly droning, like this drum, just drink. And it's like, I'm the guy who drinks no matter what. You can tell me all the horror stories. I can do all the horror stories myself in my own life, and that does not matter. I will drink no matter what. I am that guy. So don't tell me go to meetings and don't drink in between. Doesn't work. Not for this alcoholic. You know, I'll go to meetings and leave and drink. You know? You ever seen those guys? It's like, oh, he's a really bad alcoholic. It's like, no, man. It's like, that's alcoholic. You know? It's like, you're drinking. Get your drink on. Go for it. You know? And so I'm unwrapping these things, and there's a bottle of Kahlua and a bottle of white wine. And I chug the, you know, I think I drink the white wine first, but I drink the bottle of Kahlua straight and then the white wine, and that's sick, really sick, you know, and I start, you know, of course I wind up at the porcelain altar, and there's some other insanity that I went with that night where I had a shotgun pointed at my friend because he wouldn't give me what I wanted, and I pulled the trigger, and but I was a responsible gun owner, and there's nothing in there, and you know, I think Joe knew that because I thought it was funny. I used to get out the gun, and this is crazy, but I used to get out the gun, and I'd jump out at my friends over from school, and I'd be like, I'm going to kill you, and they'd just start crying, and like, oh, my God, Dad. Click, ah, you know, and you know, the stupid thing was they kept coming back. I mean, that's awesome, you know. It's like, watch this, dude, I'm going to make him cry, you know, and you know, but I hucked it at Joe. I was pissed, and I left, and they were worried about me, and I came back, though, and I threw up horribly that night, and that was good for about, I think about a year and a half I stayed sober on that one. That scared me badly, and, you know, I wind up, though, in a year and a half, and one night, I just, out of the blue, I relapse again. You know, I'm just going to meetings. I'm just hanging out, doing nothing. I'm getting sponsors by writing their names on the sheet. I never talked to the guy. And they come up and say, hey, I see you. I'm your sponsor. You know, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, actually, I just asked Glenn to be my sponsor. Sorry about that, you know. And so I did that game for a while, you know, the sponsorship naming thing, you know. And I go into another treatment center this time. But this time I'm broken, you know, and I really am broken. You know, I've tried this thing. I've tried NA, CA, AA. I mean, I didn't even do cocaine, and I went to CA just to see what they had, you know, and could have saved myself a lot of time because apparently they use the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous also in there. That kind of sucked. But, you know, I did that, and I'm at this NA meeting this one night, and I'm sitting there, and it's right by my mom's house, and I did 1 through 5 in that last treatment center. I thought that would do it. You know, I did 5 steps. I'm going to make it, you know, and I walk up the hill by my mom's house, and I'm looking up at the sky to where God, who I don't even believe in anymore, is there, and I'm just like, you know what, you know, and I look to Mrs. Walker's house to make sure she's not looking at me talking out loud to the sky, and I'm like, you know, I'm done, you know, if you got anything, you better send it quick, because I'm done, you know, because I had that feeling that you guys know that you get. I stayed sober about a year and a half, and I can't do it anymore, man. I can't fight the fight every day. You know, I'm just wearing down. And sometimes it lasted 3 months. Sometimes it lasted a year. Sometimes it lasted a night, you know. And that's the thing. I can't plan on it. I don't know when it's going to happen, so I can't plan. Ooh, when I feel like that, I better do this, you know, or say this prayer. You know, that doesn't even occur to me. You know, it just doesn't even come into my thinking. It's just like, drink sounds good. Yeah. Drink, you know, it's that simple. It's nothing magical, you know. And I started to walk up the hill, and I said, oh yeah, by the way, if you don't send anything now, you know, I can't do this anymore. I'm tired of watching the pain in my mom's eyes and watching her struggle and watching her son kill himself, you know. And my mom used to sit there. It was the worst thing. I'd pull in. I used to steal her car all the time, you know, and I'd steal the car, and I didn't even have a license, you know, and I'd just steal it. From the time I was 13, I was driving, you know, I'd see her. She'd stand there the day at night. She'd catch me, and she'd be in a robe sitting there looking at me. And it's just like, oh, that disappointment, you know, just that look of disappointment again, you know, again, Brendan, again, you know, it's like, hey, Mom, you know, and I just couldn't do any better than that. I mean, that was the best of my own ability. That's the best I did, you know, and I said, you know, if you don't send anything, I'm going to take as much alcohol and drugs as I can and blow my heart up, man, because I just can't do this game anymore. And as these stories go, you know, I met a guy through a friend of mine. We were hanging out insane together in AA, and he said, "We're going to this guy's house, and he's reading through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he makes it interesting." And I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, "Well, how does he do that?" And he just looks at me. He's like, "He reads it to us, you know." And I'm like, "Okay, you know, like, you know, they used to tell us to read that to go to sleep in treatment, and it works, you know. It's like, if you don't have somebody explaining that stuff to you and reading it to you, it's like, I mean, it's simple stuff, but for some reason, it's just, I don't get it, you know. I'm bored and I go to sleep." And so I go over to this guy's house, John, and he's like 7 feet tall, you know. He's a big man, and he's loud, you know, and I need loud, like I say, because my mind's loud, you know, and I need something to get through that, you know, and my ego's like the size of Texas, you know. And he can see that face of hopelessness in me and that hole in me, you know. And you hear people talk about that hole in you that the wind blows through, you know. It's like, I'm just hollow of a human being. I'm reduced to the shell of existence, only one might say, for drinking. You know, that's really my life's mission. I'm here to drink myself to death. Thanks, you know. And John looks at me and he gives me the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's that first step, that identification. And that's why it's so important to have that, you know, that primary purpose question answered. He looked at me dead in my eyes and said, "Why do you think you're an alcoholic?" And I looked at him and I started, "Oh, you know, that night with Joe and the shotgun, or this, you know, I stole the parents' van when I was 14, totaled it, wiped it down, ran home, and, you know, faked a burglary so to cover up for it, and, you know, all these crazy stories, you know." And John's just listened to me patiently, and he gave me patience. You know, those sponsors, you know, they do that sometimes in the beginning, you know, they'll be patient with you. And that's always in the beginning until they're like, "All right, had enough, shut up," you know, and, you know, I love that, you know. But I mean, boy, when he just sat there and I just puked, like I did at meetings. You know, I used to just go to meetings and I'd take you hostage. You guys ever go to those meetings? They take you hostage for like a half an hour of this diatribe of how their car broke down and blah, 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 blah. And you're just like, "Oh my God," you know, "but at least I'm sober," you know, and you're like, "Great," you know, and, you know. And that's what I was doing. I was taking them hostage, you know. No recovery whatsoever. It was just puke on you and leave, you know, every night. "Here comes Brendan. Great." You know, it was funny. I heard this statement lately, and I just laughed my butt off. You know, my good buddy, oh God, Bud, this meeting I go to now, and old guy, and he says, "You know, I've been around here long enough to finally understand that keep coming back wasn't a compliment," you know. And it's like, isn't that a good one? It's like, yeah, man, I relate with that. It's like, keep coming back. I'm like, "Thanks, man, I will." You know, it's like, they're like, "Please, God, do something with this guy," you know, like, I mean, answer his prayer, kill him, you know, and, you know, so it's like, you know, I'm, oh, dear Lord, you know, God, but anyways, I'm at John's, and John's patient with me, and he listens to my story, and he goes, "You know what, Brendan, I never did any of those things, I didn't do any of those things, and I'm an alcoholic. How many DUIs do you have?" And I'm like, "I don't have any. I mean, I've driven a lot drunk, but I never got caught." And he's like, "He's got 7. And I'm like, "Wow." You know, he's driving problem. But, these other people telling all these different stories, and there's all these different mismatching behavior of these wild stories. But he gives me this great gift, because I thought that's what an alcoholic was all this craziness in my life, and of course, I must be an alcoholic. And of course, I mean, those were huge signs. I mean, duh, you know, like, drinking's not working for you. You might want to think about not. And, you know, but what ended up happening is that, you know, I'm realizing that my behavior patterns vary considerably between these people. But there's one thing we have in common. And he starts looking, and he opens up to that first, you know, that title page of the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And back then, they still had the circle and triangle in the book. And he shows me, you know, unity, recovery, and service. And he says, "You know what, Brendan, here's unity, and this is the body, you know. And this is where you physically remove yourself from alcoholism. And this is where the 12 traditions, we're in meetings, and they help us run those, you know. And, you know, we hang out there to remove yourself. And here's recovery, Brendan, you know, with the 12 steps and being a sponsee, you know, and going through that and doing exactly what it says page by page, the AA recovery program." And he points out in the book where it actually says the first portion of this volume, which describes the AA recovery program. And I was like, whoa, how long's that been in there? You know, it's like, oh, since 1939, you know, and it's like, you know, but I didn't know that was what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I've been in there for 4.5 years in and out. Treatment centers, aftercares, all this stuff. And I had no idea what the program of recovery was in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I was doing was Brendan's a la carte. I was going to the AA buffet, you know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll try a little bit of that, a little bit of that, and see what happens, you know, and hope this goes well, you know, and you know what ends up happening is I'm going through this guy, and he starts pointing this stuff out. And then he says, but here's the thing, Brendan. Once you take a drink whatsoever, it says in the doctor's opinion that, you know, in this restless, irritable, and discontented, you know, unless you can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once, by taking a few drinks which others take with impunity, without harm. And it explains that thing that I could not ever explain. Why, for the love of God, would I go drink again when I had a period of sobriety? That's the most insane thing I ever did. The most insane thing I ever did is, despite my experience, what was happening over a period of sobriety, I made a decision to take a drink, you know? And it wasn't like this thinking decision. It was like sometimes it just took me, you know? But it was like, I drank again, which was, if you look at my life, it was completely insane. Nobody would do that. Nobody in their right mind would do that. And then the other thing is that once I did, I had that allergic reaction, which other people don't have. As an alcoholic, once I take that drink, I am off and running. I have little or no control whatsoever, you know? And so I'm identifying, I'm like, oh my God. And what this is like this deflation of me, but for this shimmer of hope where I realize this guy has some info. This guy understands. And it's that identification, that very important identification, that first step happened for the first time ever. And I went through the book with this guy, and I'd like to say my first try through I was great and I'm the golden AA child, you know, but that's not how my story is. You know, what happened is I died in my first four step. I got in some really sick behavior, almost drank, went back crying to my sponsor, and he's like, all right, are you done? I'm like, yes. You know, and he put me back in another workshop. And all that is he just was too busy to meet with us individually. We had, there was like 10 guys. I mean, this guy, people were asking him, please help me, you know, because he had something that we wanted. He was attractive, you know. There was something about his message that just grabbed you, and you're like, this guy understands, but he's not living the way we're living. I need to know. What is this, you know? And so we're meeting with this guy, and I go through, and I'm in the third step, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, you don't owe me anything. I know this, but I really need a sign that something's going to change here. And we're up at this old, actually, my first treatment center up on the hill, and there was it used to be a seminary, so there was this big cathedral attached to it that we never went into. And I'm walking in, and I'm almost in tears because I'm like, if this doesn't work, if this does not work, I am a dead man. I now am armed with facts about myself where I understand I am a dead man. This is a life and death deal. You know, there is no fun anymore. There's no ha-ha rat boy. It's like, I'm going to die a bad death. And most of us, usually it's we die alone. We die alone, you know. I can't tell you the number of people I've buried where it was a few days till we found them, you know. I won't even get into those, but I mean, just tragic, horrible stories, you know, and hearing those, it kills me, you know, just to know that answer is there, and they just can't quite get it, you know, so I walk in this cathedral, and I'm on my knees, and I'm going to do the third step prayer, and I look up, and the whole entire cathedral ceiling is gigantic. I mean, they're enormous. This thing is like as wide as this, and it's just this big curved ceiling, and we're walking up this huge Gothic thing, you know, and it's like circle and triangle all along the roof, these huge circle and triangles all along the roof, and the, you know, symbol of, you know, that symbol of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just like, I just come to tears. I'm like, oh, thank you. You know, like, I mean, he didn't owe that to me or anything, and I know that, you know, that doesn't mean that you need to have that happen to stay sober, but I'm telling you, at that moment, he showed me kindness, you know. I needed that, you know. And I had this. I said this prayer because I was afraid, since I died in my first one, I wouldn't have those resentments again, or they would be reduced, and I wouldn't have a big enough inventory to be sufficient. So I went home and I made this prayer, and I did my third step again, and I said, God, please let me have enough resentments here, you know. And I'm afraid of that. And if you're new or you haven't done your inventory, do not ever say that prayer ever. I just want you to know that. Bad idea. I puked out on that paper, and I kept paper after paper after paper after paper, because I'm largely self-absorbed, and that's all that is. I am largely self-absorbed, and I write this inventory, 264 different people, about 3 resentment each. You can do the math. I'm not, and then I get to my fear inventory and my sex inventory, and on the inventory, he starts to show me in there a miracle of this deal, and it says, it doesn't say, Brendan, we're going to look at your part and their part. It says, we're going to, and I did this list, and I did the resentment in the third column, and I go over, and he says, we set them aside entirely, you know, they don't even have a part, I don't care, dad, 99.9% at fault sometimes, not interested, we're interested in you, because if I'm waiting for my dad to change, good luck. You know, I'm going to be waiting a long time. If I'm waiting for you to change because I got a resentment against you and you need to treat me better, good luck, man. Do you ever try to get an alcoholic to do anything? I mean, you know, good luck, you know. And so I'm starting to look at this inventory, and I'm starting to see the truth. And I'll sum it up with this, you know, my inventory. There's this one that I like to tell because it kind of sums up the whole thing. And I'm reading them this resentment, and I'm like, yeah, this is a good one. You know, they really do this to me, and there's no part, you know, excuse me, not part, but, you know, I'm looking at my inventory, and I don't see anything there. And, you know, I'm reading this thing about people when I'm walking down the road, and they're looking at me, you know, they glare at me, you know, those people, like, punking you, and you're like, yeah, what's up? What are you looking at? What are you looking at? What are you looking at? You know, I have these cars going by, like, yeah, yeah, I see you. Uh-huh. Well, yeah, you're tough. Yeah, come on back. Come on. And, you know, it's like, you know, let's play. And, you know, I look at that, and my sponsor's like, yeah, Brandon, why do they, it said, people who stare at you with those effed up attitudes is what I wrote, word for word. And he's like, what? You know, like, what is this one, you know? And he's just giving this strange look, you know, and poor John, man. God, you know, what a saint, you know, to listen to that crap. And he just looks at me and said, how do you know they're staring? And I'm like, because, you know, I started going my thing again. I'm all excited because I'm justified, you know, I'm justified anger, you know. And he goes, Brandon, how do you know? They are staring at you. And finally, I'm about to go in it again. And I'm looking at him thinking, he wants me to say something. I don't get it. And all of a sudden, it dawns on me. I'm like, oh, I'm staring at them. And he's like, yeah. You can't know somebody's staring unless you are staring. You know, I mean, it's physically impossible. It's like, you know you're staring at me. I mean, it just doesn't work. You know, it's like, you know, it just can't happen. It's physically impossible. And the light comes on. I'm like, oh, my God, my entire inventory is like this. Everybody I hate and everybody I resent, it has nothing to do with them. It's my delusional and distorted thinking. My whole life. I mean, everything, you know? And I'm just amazed. And it's like, you know, everyone else is like, they can see it clear as day, but I'm amazed. You know, it's like this spiritual awakening for Brendan. It's like, oh my God, I'm at fault. I love that one, you know? And it's a crushing blow, but you know what? It releases you from that ego, you know, that thing. And I literally walked away there like I had this freedom, this weight off my shoulders. And I got busy, you know, and I'm going to talk about that because I got real busy. You know, I awakened to this deal, you know, and I went home and I did the hour and I looked at my 6 and 7 and the things that we found objectionable. And it came down, reduced down to a couple things. You know, and I looked at that fear list again, the fears that I had on self-reliance versus God-reliance, what God would have for me. You know, and I suggest you do that if you ever get an inventory. And then the sex inventory, you know, honestly, I was the type of drinker that I just, I didn't want to be bothered, you know, I just wanted to drink. I mean, really, I mean, that was my story. It was like, yeah, you're cute, but, you know, I liking my whiskey, you know, and, you know, I really, it was short. I just didn't care. I was like, yeah, that's nice, you know, and, you know, so, you know, I went through that, but I found out that every single relationship I had there was completely selfish. I hadn't had one relationship. And there were some I thought, oh, I was so good to her. Oh, my God. And, you know, I saw what I was really doing, and it was some ugly behavior. And I'm just going to share in a general way. You know, I'm not going to get into specifics because that belongs in the fifth step. But, you know, what ended up happening is that I saw the truth in these things, and I wrote out an ideals list of my own conduct and what I wanted to grow towards, and I asked God to guide me and give me the willingness to grow towards that. You know, and it didn't say that I was going to describe my ideal woman. I see some people, some guys I've sponsored, they do that, and I'm like, dude, that's not what I said. I said, you know, the ideal of you, what you see in yourself, you know, here, that I would be kind and considerate, you know, those kind of things, you know. Not that she would be blonde, 6 feet tall, you know, I mean, no, that's not what I'm doing. And they come with me, I'm like, no, that's not what it says. So I'm starting to deal with those every area of my life. You know, my ideal, you know, as far as what would God's vision of my life be? You know, and for the first time in my life, I'm actually starting to be happy when I wake up. And I'm not waking up like this. And I'm not going into prayer. And if you're as disturbed as I was when I walked in here, I used to not be able to pray. I used to go into this prayer and I'd try to pray. And that's the worst thing, you know, that moment of silence before the prayer. Let's pause for a moment of silence to reflect on the reasons why we're here. And I'd just be like, you know, silence, you know, not good, you know. And, you know, we do the prayer and it was thank God, you know. And, you know, what ends up happening, though, you know, I get serious about this deal, you know, and I get into my amends. And, man, I'll tell you what a miracle that was. I had a lot, you know, on that resentment. So I had a lot of amends to do. But a lot of them were fancied, You know, I had a lot of resentments. You guys ever have that where you think, you know, you act, these things were actually going on and it was just all in your head? You know, this whole crazy game. You know, I was like best friends and really super nice to these people, but inside I was just like, I want to take a pair of scissors and just jab it in your throat, you know? And, you know, and so I'd write that stuff down, you know, and they'd be like, wow, you know? And, you know, but I didn't owe them an amends because, you know what, I never caused harm. I never caused direct harm. I pretended with those people. Oh, hi, good to see you, you know? And what ended up happening, though, I go back and I start to pay the money back, not my money, their money. I took it from them. I made amends to my father, and he told me as he hung up the phone with the detective that I was no longer on the persons of interest list. And I looked at him and I said, I didn't know they had one, and he responded, neither did I. And, you know, at that moment, I realized some of the harm. It's funny, I'm going to make amends to my dad, and I see the harm right there live of what I've done to his reputation in town, what I've done to my family. I'm starting to see some of the damage and wreckage. Because it's not just, that's the biggest lie of all. Oh, I don't harm anybody. I'm just hurting myself. Oh, please. You know, that's the most another self-absorbed thought. I'm creating havoc everywhere I look, everywhere. So I make amends to these guys that I used to, that I beat up, that one guy that I'm telling you about, Steve. And he tells me that he's actually trying to get sober himself now. And he actually is willing enough to meet with me. He tells me about, he's got this new Bondo glue thing for his teeth that I knocked out so he can eat an apple now for the first time. And he's all excited about it. He's like, yeah, it's great. I got this new stuff from Japan. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm such a jerk, you know? And so I'm looking at him like, man, I am so sorry, Steve. But more than that, you know, I go through my amends and how can I make the books balance here? And it's about listening to them and them telling you how I can make it right. And he tells me, and you know what's funny, is this happened to me more than once on these. He said, look, you know, I hear what you're saying about this, and would you do me a favor? Would you tell me about that inventory stuff, where this came from, and this stuff? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm here because I caused harm to this guy. I'm making amends, and he wants me to sponsor him and take him through the book. And I'm just like, whoa, you know, like, God's got a much, you know, I'm thinking I'm just going to make this amends and thanks, see ya, I'm really, really sorry, what can I do, you know, and thinking, well, not much I can do. I can't, you know, put in new ones, you know, and I do that, you know, and we start a workshop, you know, and I'm sponsoring several guys. Another one, same thing happened. He said, my sister's dying of heroin addiction and drinking, and I knew her, Shelley, and I'm sitting there and I'm crying with this guy at his at his office, his bookstore thing, and I apologized to him and the humiliation I made him have in school and how he got picked on every day after that, you know. You know, every day after that fight that I had with him, he was picked on, you know, and I got to hear about that. He let me know, you know, and I had to sit there and listen, you know, because I needed to let him get free. And that's what I started to see, is I started to see the people that I caused harm to, when I made amends, they were getting free. The amends wasn't about me and me getting free so much. I started to go on the motive of I needed to set them free and allow them that opportunity. And isn't that funny how this thing goes, this unselfishness of this program? I set them free, and in so doing, I become free. You know? This thing is on its head, you know? But it works, you know? And I go through this, and I get done, and I'm sponsoring guys now, and I'm complaining. Well, actually, I'm complaining I'm not sponsoring anyone, and I'm about a year and a half sober. And no one's asking me, and this guy Bill comes up. This one night I didn't even talk in a meeting, and we start talking about the big book, wants to come over. And I think, you know, I was trying to think about it the other day, but I think he asked me if he could bring one guy over, his friend or something, he called me. And so my first guy, I'm all excited, and I open the door when he shows up, and there's eight guys. And I'm like, again, don't complain. Don't say, I'm afraid I won't have too many resentments. Don't say, I don't think I'll have enough sponsees. God answers those, man, and he just flooded me, and I got busy, because I'm the type of alcoholic that if I don't have something going on, something's going on, you know, like, you know what I mean? So it's not to be so busy that, you know, there's a balance, you know, it's not just stay busy, 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 so I don't drink, not that. It's that I need this thing. I need to be tapped in, plugged in to Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be plugged in with my brothers and sisters and everybody in this deal, because if I don't, that alcoholic mind starts to work, you know, it will, you know, it hasn't happened in years. I have not had the thought of drink. I mean, I really haven't, you know, and that's not everyone's experience. You know, some people, this thing struggles for a while, you know, but my experience is that I have been relieved of the obsession of alcoholism. That mind, that craziness, that total insanity is gone. It has left me. completely. I don't have the conversations with myself walking down the street anymore. If you guys had those, I don't know, I'm sure Pete can relate, but, you know, walking down the street and talking to myself and then realizing people are looking at me and thinking, oh my God, and then laughing out loud because you're realizing they can see you, and then you're realizing you're laughing out loud and now you can look crazier. That's a good one. So, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. So I'm getting not only able to stay sober and awakened in this thing, but the craziness of my mind is coming down. And I get involved, and I start going to intergroup, and I'm 21 years old. I'm just the young kid on the block, and I'm just showing up for duty. I'm just showing up for the group. And they need board elections, so they ask for volunteers. And like, hey, Brandon, we need one more. Sure, why not? I didn't even want it. I didn't care. And, you know, God put me to work. You know, I suddenly was on the board, and I'm like, what the hell just happened? You know, I just showed up for intergroup, you know, and so then they, oh, we need a director of the board, and they're like, well, how about Brendan? And I'm like, whatever, you know, and so I'm 21 years old, this little punk kid, and I'm running the intergroup office, you know, and it's not me, you know, it's God. God's running that office. God's demonstrating through me what he can do, you know, and we're doing this deal, and I'm getting involved in all this service work, and I'm staying busy. I get that home group. I have a service position. I meet with my sponsor. And you know what? My sponsor, by the way, I used to take a couple buses to his house because I didn't have a car or a license. I had a license. I wasn't using it. I think I had a license then. But anyway, so I was on the bus, and I walked, like, I don't know, a couple miles to his house. So I don't ask my guys to do anything I didn't do. But when I hear them complain about, I don't know, as I take a bus, it's like, see ya. You know, are you willing? Are you really willing? If you really wanted a drink or a drug, how far would you go? Would you take a bus? Probably, you know. And I've been really busy in this thing. We started Northwest Fellowship of the Spirit conference up in Washington. And, you know, I can't say enough about this and my heroes, you know. And I've been put in places around this country where I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just like, are you serious? You really want me to go talk to those guys in Utah? You know, like, okay. You know, like, here I am, whatever, you know. But, you know, I mean, God takes me to places, you know. And I don't go there. I go to jail. I get drunk on my best, you know. And I cause wreckage everywhere I go. And I hurt my mom terribly. And I'll have you say that my mom's one of my best friends today. You know, my mom doesn't hang up the probation appointment, you know, slips on the wall anymore. And I went back to school, and I became a nerd. She started putting on Dean's Honor Roll list slips up on the wall, you know, and it was like, oh my God, you know, I mean, there's my mom smiling and putting these little nerdy things up, you know, smiley face, you know, and like, so proud of you, you know, and oh my God, love it, you know, and a little 5-foot Irish woman, you know, and just cute, you know, love her to death. And, you know, I think, you know, again, you know, I never think I'm good enough. I don't think I'm going to get into UW, you know, the university, and I apply. And my sponsor's like, oh, yeah, I might as well not apply then, Brendan, but I apply. And I get this full, you know, this scholarship, and I get in, and I'm like, oh, my God, are you serious? And I go into pre-med, and I graduate with, you know, a degree in English creative writing and cell and molecular biology. And, you know, I did really well, you know. And, I mean, I'm a dork, you know. I mean, I'm the guy throwing knives and fighting people and drinking, you know. I don't do that stuff, you know. It's like God just took over my life and just went, all right, here you go, you know. And you know what, I'm not a doctor today, just make that clear. You know, I actually own my own insurance agency, and that's a crazy story in itself. They literally handed me a book of business for free. I was trying to figure out, well, do I really want to go into that? And I came to the conclusion in prayer that, you know, I met a woman who I love deeply, and you know, Stacy, and she and I were getting serious, and family was what was most important, which came up in my prayer 6 months later. We pause, sometimes for 6 months, you know, really. And the decision came, and all, you know, I applied at all these biotech, pharmaceutical, all this stuff, and Allstate called me one day and said, we got a unique situation, and, you know, I'm used to these calls by now, you know. I got a unique situation. I'm like, oh, where am I going now, God, you know, and, you know, he has fun with me. I swear to God, it's like he's just having fun with me, you know, and I'm along for the ride, you know, and say, we have a book of business we want to give you, you know, and if you'll just take it over. And, I mean, that doesn't happen, you know. I mean, it would have cost me like $80,000 to buy it, you know, and they just gave it to me, you know. And so now I took that over, and we're engaged to be married next year, August 8th, you know. And My brother Kevin's sober. He's 5 years sober, you know, younger than I am. My brother Brian's 5 years older than me in sobriety. My mom's in Al-Anon. My brother Sean, we're still wondering. And my brother James seems to be normal in every respect. In fact, he was a National Merit Scholarship finalist, the top 1% GPAs in the country. Unreal. Like, where did you come from? You know, I just, you get one of those in your family, you're like, who are you, dude? Like, mom, was there any night you were drinking and you stayed somewhere else, you know, and there wasn't, you know, and my brothers, you know, it's funny. They actually, I've had them call me for advice. Oh, I mean, I'm like, I'm 4 out of 5 and they're calling me, you know, hey, can I ask you a question? I'm like, oh yeah, you know, and I'm available for that, you know, I'm available for that. And that's not because I talk a certain way. It's because I've demonstrated in my life, you know, God has demonstrated through me this life of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they've seen how I am. And it says that in there. It says, much more powerful demonstration lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And I'll tell you, you can talk the talk in here, but when you hit the street, I want to see what you do. How do you treat people? What do you do? How are you in business, your personal relationships? It's like, and you know what? My personal relationships were not so easy at first. It took my mom about 2 years to stop, you know, the behavior she was towards me. And that's not because of her fault. It's because I trained her that way. My behavior trained her to be that way, you know, and she stopped. You know, after 2 years, she realized I had changed, and she changed. But I had to learn patience, you know, and not react. You know, I had to go within. And, you know, this, man. I mean, my mom, the damage and things I used to say to her, we went back and we repainted that house. We replaced every door. I had 16 holes on one side of my door from fist marks. And that was just my door. I mean, there was holes all over our house. My brother threw a vacuum through the wall because it bunked him in the head on the steps. I mean, it was just, it was insane. You know, our house has reflected now physically what's happened inside. And it's never happened by dressing nice, getting a job, speaking a lingo. It's an inside job. This thing had to change from the inside out because I've tried all the outside stuff. I've tried the treatment. I've tried the counseling. I've tried you. And I hate to say it, you're just as powerless as I am. And if I want you to save me, you can't. You can't. We can hang here together and try to help each other. And there is a power there amongst us. You know, the fellowship is something that's great, you know. But I need something greater than that. And that idea of God has grown from that simple idea bigger and bigger each day, you know, to now where, I mean, I have such a belief and a faith, and I understand that now. You know, and who knows if I'll stay sober to the day I die. I don't know. I hope so. You know, sometimes I get a little cocky and I think, yeah, I'm going to stay sober forever, you know, and getting tripped on that. But, you know, I can't count on that. You know, I have to be active in here. I have to be. If I don't, I wither and die. It's like a plant, you know. You have to water it and feed it. If you don't, it will wither and die. It's the same thing with my spiritual life. I need to, it says, the maintenance and growth of our spiritual condition, you know, and that's what I have today. I want to thank you for allowing me to speak and share my story with you. And I don't know if I, you know, who I'm here for. Actually, I think I'm here for Aaron, actually, in the back. That's who I think I'm here for. You know, and if anyone else here got anything out of that, good, you know, but again, it's not me. This is God demonstrating through me what he can do. So if you want to thank somebody, thank God. Thanks.